Backchat Studios is a part of the Acast Creator Network. Head to backchatpodcast.com.au to sign up as a patron and access all of our merch.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, here we are. You know what you're listening to. It's the Backchat Basketball Show. You might be watching on YouTube, on Backchat Studios' YouTube channel. If you are, I'm going to ask you to do something straight off the bat, and there's a reason for that. And Mitch, I'll get to you in a second. Leave a comment on this YouTube video for your chance to win a prize. Now, I've got a fully signed Wildcats jersey from last year. It's got every single player on there, Mitch Norton included. Okay, it's from last year. But it's still good. You leave a comment on the YouTube chat, on our YouTube video there, and we're going to draw one random person from that. So go have a look at that, Backchat Studios on YouTube. If you just listen, go there, subscribe, give it a like, and leave us a comment. New episodes coming out every Wednesday. Backchat_basketball is where you find us on Instagram. Let's get straight into it. Mitch Norton is here. Thanks, man. Thanks for coming in.
No worries. I'm glad to be here.
I know you're a bit of a Backchat guy, so I'm going to throw a question at you straight off the bat that you might already know, but we like to find out people's greatest sporting achievements, and you know, you can't say anything basketball related.
Yep.
I'm going to give you a new one, right? So a lot of times I talk about the cricket, my cricket prowess, so I'm going to give you some time to think about something. Five for 16 in a grand final, under 12s. I've got a new one, fresh off the boat, fresh exclusive.
Yeah.
In year seven, they introduced javelin to the school carnival, right? And it wasn't like the proper javelins, of course, because kids, but it's like this shorter, hard plastic one. And I threw a javelin, and they couldn't believe what they saw. Like, it went so far, right?
True.
So what happened was they put me into the inter-school javelin throw, right? And I had to do a trial so that I could get into the inter-school thing. When they saw my distance that I could throw compared to the rest of the inter-school, I was like way short. Like, it was horrible, right?
Right.
But for a split second, St. Dennis Primary School in year seven thought they had like
a future Olympian.
Yeah, a future Olympian. The next big thing. Wasn't to be. So for a moment, I was like potentially a javelin guy.
Yeah.
Olympian.
That's impressive.
Thank you. Thank you very much. What about yourself? Greatest sporting thing you've ever done? Not on the basketball field or court.
Not on the basketball court. Year five, I represented Queensland for athletics.
Yep.
So I was a 100-meter specialist.
Nice.
We in the relay at nationals, we won the gold medal.
Did you?
So I started off the relay. I was runner number one.
Yep.
And yeah, we got a gold medal. So I've got a gold medal for a 100-meter, 4x100-meter relay.
That's big. That's big. Scully over there always talks about 80-meter hurdles. I don't think he actually won the gold, though. So that's you've taken it. That's brilliant. And the number one runner, it's usually like you're like the second fastest. Is that how it works? Usually, are you the fastest? How'd you do that?
Yeah, I don't know. Because I finished fourth representing North Queensland. So when all the schools came together, which then put me in the team to go away to nationals. And then... at nationals, I finished fourth as well.
Right.
So I ended up knocking off, I guess, another Queensland runner during the time. But
huge.
It was a strange time. Like I never used starting blocks. I just got a pair of spikes.
Right.
So representing like North Queensland, I've just got tape on the feet and everyone's wearing spikes. So I was the only one in the final for the 100 meter standing up, just ready, set, go.
And, so everyone else is
down, crouch, using the block. So, it was a little intimidating, but, yeah, that would have to be it.
Were you always a basketballer from a kid? Like, did you play... So you're brought up in Queensland.
Yeah.
Was that a big thing for you as a kid, playing basketball?
No, so I wanted to play soccer
when
I was young and had to wait until I was, like, five or whatever. And, you know, like, back then, all you want to do is play sport.
Yeah.
So Soccer was the sport I wanted to play. Had to wait a year until I was old enough to play, I guess, team sport. Rocked up to soccer tryouts or whatever, and the coach jumped out of his car, rolled a couple of soccer balls out, jumped back in his car and took off. And that was the last we ever saw of him. So I left there going, oh, this is not really what I hoped.
Yeah.
Waited a year to play soccer, and we don't have a coach. There's no organized anything. And I was like, this isn't very fun. Went back to school the next day, and one of my best friends said, why don't you come and try basketball? And I was like, oh, I don't know, I think I might try like rugby league.
Right.
Rather than basketball, and went along to basketball and never looked back.
Right. Yeah. And were you tall for your age kid, or were you just sort of average? Because usually the taller kids gravitate towards basketball.
Yeah, no, I was kind of average growing up. I think I fouled out of every single game my first year. So
reaching a lot.
Mum and dad were like, maybe rugby league was the choice. But no, other than that, yeah, basketball's kind of been it. And I think the thing with basketball and most team sports growing up, you create friends that you'll have for the rest of your life, and I've still got close mates today.
Yeah, that's awesome. So what was then like the process of turning to more serious basketball, playing as a, you know, in school, to then what point did you go, okay, this is like something I need to take seriously?
So I guess it was a bit of a different route for me. I kind of grew up playing like club basketball, local basketball, and then would go to all the Townsville Crocs games.
Yeah.
So again, was very lucky to have an NBL team in my city.
Yeah.
So I went to all the Crocs games. I was like the first one there. As soon as the doors opened, I'd like run down and get to like watch these guys warm up. And I was like, this is pretty cool. And then, cause I was there super early. I think it was Mike Kelly at the time. I was playing with Townsville, and he was like, hey, before the coaches come out, like, can you just pass me the ball back?
Huge.
And I was like, yeah, no worries. So then I did that for like every game. And then Ian Stacker, who was the coach at the time, said, look, we've got a training Tuesday night, our only night training that you're more than welcome to come to. And Mum and Dad saw that as a bit of a bargaining chip for me to knock out all my homework on Monday.
Yeah, nice.
So I could go Tuesday. And I think I was the best student from then on. And I think going to see, I guess, those guys in that environment kind of made me think, wow, this is pretty cool. And I want to do this for a living.
That's crazy, because then Mike Kelly ends up being one of your coaches, like later on down the track, how things sort of work out like that. So were you, like, how good were you for them to be bringing you into some sort of training? Like, were you playing in like tournaments and stuff like that? Or
so I was probably like 8 or 9, so I was really young.
Right. All right.
So I was just going there to floor sweep.
Yeah, right.
So I get to go and watch this incredible professional environment where there's guys like Rob Rose, Pat Reedy, like, you know, Olympians and you know, MVPs of the league and all this stuff. And I got to go and watch and learn at a really young age. So from then on, and you know, I started off with floor sweeping, and then I got to do, you know, the game clock and shot clock, which is some of the scariest jobs in the world when you got really competitive people in a professional environment that don't want to lose. And the ball goes through the basket and you got to stop the clock, put the score on, and all in time. And I was like 12 years old and getting yelled at by by grown men, and it was pretty scary. But then from there you move on to, you know, I guess warm-up drills and ball handling and stuff like that as you got a little older. And I mean, I was so thankful, because when I got to go back to under 12s training, and they're teaching defense and how to rotate and everything, I was like, oh, this is easy. Like, how do kids not understand this? But I was obviously getting to learn from a pretty elite
That's
level.
Awesome. So you just sort of embedded in it from a young age, and that's how you grew. That's really cool. So then at what point did you know that you could be professional? Like, what was that moment like?
So I think that probably didn't really click until I got to go away, represent Queensland at a couple of national championships and perform pretty well. Although, you know, our team wasn't loaded with talent. I thought we just played really hard, and I was, you know, putting up some pretty good numbers at the time. So from there, I guess we got to go to junior Australian camps and things like that. And when I made the under 17 World Cup team, that was probably the moment where I thought, all right, things are yeah. kind of moving in the right direction.
Yeah. So how, like, at that age, 17, you're having to try and look at, I don't know, getting a job and stuff like that. So how do you balance trying to pursue professional sport as well as, you know, knowing what to do after school?
Yeah. So, I mean, that was tough. I was kind of lucky because in Queensland, we finished high school when we were 17.
Right.
Yeah, 17. Yes. So at that time, all I was doing was school and basketball. And I happened to miss a fair chunk of school just with camps and world champs and stuff like that for under 17. So it was tough trying to juggle all of that. But then I received a scholarship to go to the Australian Institute of Sport.
Yeah.
Where I was going to finish school and then move down to Canberra. So it kind of all worked out quite nicely.
So you have an opportunity to play at the World Champs, but you broke your foot, right? Mm. What was that sort of like, knowing you're so close to something like that and then, you know, sort of out of your control, an injury like that popping up?
Yeah, so I think that was a really tough injury to handle. You go away with the under-19 team. I was bottom age, so a lot of the people that you're living with at the AIS, like the point of the AIS is to win medals on a world stage.
Yeah.
To get everyone there young enough and live together and create those friendships and bonds and everything to hold you in good stead moving forward. So to go away, do all the pre-world stuff and be playing really well, end up kind of cracking my way into the starting point guard spot there. And then one of the last practice games before the Worlds, yeah, broke a bone in my foot. So
how'd you do that? Was it like someone's foot or something? Or?
Yeah, someone just kind of like stood on my foot and I went to dive for the ball and it just...
Did you know straight away?
Not straight away. I kind of, yeah, it didn't feel great. And then walking off, I was like, yeah, it's pretty sore. And I didn't want to try and give too much away to the medical staff. And yeah. But yeah, when I took my shoe off, it blew up straight away and we could kind of tell that something wasn't right. But leaving the floor, I kind of got carried off and put into the back of like this ambulance. And the ambulance in Latvia, not exactly great. So we had no idea what they were saying, but the doc was with me. So I'm like laying on the back of this bed in the ambulance and he's like flying through traffic and I'm like half rolling off the bed and we don't know where we're going. No, we don't know what's happening. And then eventually get to the hospital and find out the x-ray and yeah, that it was a break. And probably one of the toughest conversations I've had or anything was trying to explain to my teammates that, yeah, I've been living with you guys for 6 months and
yep.
You know, yous have done so much for me. Moving away from home for the first time as well. So like a lot of these guys taught me how to do, you know, a lot of the stuff that you do on a day-to-day basis. And yeah, so it was tough to stand up in front of them and say that, yeah, I'm going to have to miss out on the World Cup.
That's brutal. I the last time I played basketball, I put up a shot and landed on someone's foot and turned my ankle and broke my ankle. And yeah, you take the shoe off and it was so big and it was brutal, like so blue. And yeah, going to the hospital and the only thing that made it better were these like little, I can't remember what the tablets were, but all of a sudden like the pain just dissolved. But I did my ankle that many times playing just C grade, you know, at Loftus. And yeah, it's such a debilitating thing. Like it's still sore for me now. I never rehabbed it properly, but
yeah.
Ankles and basketball, it's just the story of my short casual basketball career. So 2011 you get to play for the Crocs, which is pretty cool that you got to watch them and grow up with them as a kid, play for the team. Do you remember getting the call up and how that went to say that you'd be playing?
Yeah, so I broke my foot at under 19 Worlds, got to stay there for the tournament, flew straight back to Townsville where I was going to have surgery there, and then the plan was to go back to the AIS and do my rehab and all that stuff with the crew there who had dealt with a lot of these injuries that I had. A lot of the, you know, former guys, I think Joe Ingles, I think Paddy, I think a lot of them have kind of been through that route. So I knew I was going to be in good hands going back there. And then one of the owners of the club at the time was like, hey, what are you up to? I want to take you out for a coffee and run some things by you. And I was like, well, 17. I don't really drink coffee, but I'll go for a strawberry milkshake. So, we went and had a drink, and he was like, look, we're really excited. We want to bring you on as a development player. And I was like, oh, thanks, but if you have a rostered spot, I'll stay for that. But otherwise, I'm going back to the AIS. Like, I think I'm going to be better off playing every day, working on my craft. I just think that will be better for me in the long run.
Did you get, like, did they give you an opportunity for you to, like, think about that and go back to them? Or did you just, like, just big balls it and put your cards out on the table? That's pretty big for a 17-year-old.
Yeah, yeah. So, I've always been very goal-driven and like to see what's in front of me. And
yeah,
that was kind of always my route. I didn't really want a DP spot. I wanted a roster spot. And at that time, I think Trev might have been in Melbourne.
Yeah.
Andre Lamanis, who was assistant coach with the Crocs for a lot of years, was in New Zealand. So I knew I had some ties around the league.
Nice.
And then a day later, they rang me back and were like, all right, we've found a rostered spot for you. And
oh, wow.
Signed then and there.
That's pretty awesome. Just as a 17-year-old, you know, you just probably know not much leverage, you know, and not like a manager speaking for you, and you just take it. That's impressive. So what was your time at Townsville like? Obviously, the team folds in 2016, but leading up, you had five pretty good years there.
Yeah, five really good years. I think my first year, we made the playoffs. We're playing New Zealand in the semi-final, won game one over there, came back to Townsville, were up big in the fourth quarter and lost, went back to New Zealand, lost. I think to experience the playoffs in my first year was like, wow, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
We're playing, you know, alongside Eddie Gill, who's had, you know, a number of years in the NBA and was a part of the Malice in the Palace and all that stuff. So the stories you're hearing from him are like,
that's so good.
World class. And then, I guess after that, the second year, we started off terrible. I think we were 0-10 to start the year.
Right.
Got rid of imports, brought imports in, like it was pretty messy. And then Sean Dennis came in, who was over here in Perth for a lot of years, and kind of gave me my first sort of starting role and a bit more of responsibility in terms of leadership and things like that. And from there, I really saw, I guess, myself grow as a player, as a person, and the squad we had. I think we were all pretty young guys. Obviously, we didn't have a big budget at that time, and yeah, we just kind of developed and grew together. And at the end of that, we were playing some really good basketball and kind of unfortunate not to make playoffs. But when it all came to an end, it was pretty tough being a hometown boy and walking in and seeing, you know, grown men in tears because they don't know how they're going to feed their family and pay their mortgage and all that. So it kind of put everything into perspective for me. And it was a pretty tough time, but
yeah,
from there it kind of moved on to bigger, better things.
Yeah, was the writing sort of on the wall a bit with the club? Like, had you heard for a little while that things were going to happen, or was it a bit of a shock?
Yeah, so it kind of went through a couple of stages. Like, went into VA a couple of times.
Yeah.
So the writing was sort of on the wall. How I found out the last time and final time, I guess, the club was done, I was in New Zealand playing in the league over there.
Yeah.
And Nick Kay was obviously on the team for that last year as well. So we're both over there playing, same team. And I think Nick had just got a contract extension come through. So he was pretty happy. And then like 24 hours later, he's like, oh, I don't think the Crocs are around. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, you just signed. Like, I haven't heard anything. And then they get a phone call like, couple minutes later, and I was like, wow,
there you go.
It was tough.
You and Nick seem to follow each other around. So he plays at the Crocs that last year, then you both go to Illawarra for 2 years, and then you both go to the Wildcats. Was that planned at all, or like, I don't know, were you a package when those sorts of things happen?
Yeah, it was weird. Obviously, when Nick came to Townsville, we created a pretty good bond and
like a Shaq and Kobe situation.
Yeah, almost. Very close, yeah. And then when they folded, obviously Sean Dennis was really good friends with Rob Beveridge at the time, and they coached together for a lot of years, and I think they could kind of see the little combo we had.
Yeah.
So it made sense for us to pack up and move to Wollongong together, and then We played a couple of, we lived together, played a couple of seasons in New Zealand together, and then when the decision came to move to Perth, I was the first one to decide.
So he followed
Yeah, so there was a lot of stressful conversations had on the couch, and we just bounced ideas off each other, and I think we both made the right move, and they were both for different reasons. Like, you know, he wanted to come and learn from Matt Nielsen and you know, the greats and Wags and things like that, and I wanted to learn from Damo. So we both kind of had the same, I guess, thought processes, and it was cool how it all worked out.
And so you played 2 years in Illawarra, and in your final year there, you play against the Wildcats in the grand final series, and you lose that. Are you, at that point, did you know what you were doing, or was that completely in the off-season that you made that call to go to the Wildcats?
Yeah, it was completely in the off-season. So, we lost to Perth in the grand final, and then we had the Commonwealth Games.
Yeah.
And then after that gold medal game, 12 o'clock that night, free agency opened.
Right.
So everyone's out having a good time.
Yeah.
And 12 o'clock hits and people start calling, people start getting dragged away to have conversations and things like that. So it was a really strange situation.
Because people were inebriated at the time and making decisions.
Exactly.
That's great.
Exactly. So, no, it was, definitely one of the best decisions I've ever made.
So let's talk about the Wildcats then. So 2018, you come in, and before the season even starts, you get to go play in the US, right, against the Utah Jazz and what was the other team? Denver.
Yeah.
You're in the starting lineup against the Utah Jazz. Like, that's pretty surreal, right? What's that like?
Crazy.
Like,
I think it might have been the second game I ever had a Wildcats jersey on, and we're playing against Utah. Like, that is insane.
Yeah.
You're on the same floor that, you know, MJ's played on. Like, all these crazy things have happened. So, excuse me.
Yeah.
But to, like, be in that arena was unbelievable. Like, the floor spacing, you know, the people in the crowd, all that is crazy.
Yeah.
And I remember, I think Greg Heyer and I were the first ones to walk out on the floor for warm-up. And Rudy Gobert is there standing doing his hook shots on our basket. And we're both standing there like, are you? Yeah. You should go tell him to just like move. And we're both standing there just watching him. And it wasn't until one of the assistants were like, all right, we'll go down the other end now. And I remember the last thing after our team chat, we run out. Trevor Gleason's like, Mitch, you got Donovan Mitchell. Make sure he doesn't go past you.
Oh, gee.
And I was like, wow, that's, I laughed, and then I was like, oh no, he's serious. Like, this is actually really happening. So, the game itself was not pretty.
No.
We obviously had to adjust to the rules and things like that. And, I think we lost by 40 or I don't know. It wasn't pretty, but it was one of the longest games in my life because it's 48 minutes, a million timeouts and we're getting pumped. So, it was still a really cool experience.
How different is it? So you got Donovan Mitchell coming at you, trying to stop him. Like, how different is that to the NBL?
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, Ricky Rubio was there as well. So
genius.
To have those two guys to guard was a really cool learning experience for me. Just in terms of how they use their body, like their core strength and everything is unbelievable. I felt like in the NBL, you know, you can kind of push guys around a little bit. You can. Whereas those guys like running into a brick wall, and then you've got Rudy Gobert rolling down the middle at any time. So it was a lot of learning curves for us as a team. The bonding and stuff we got out of that couple of weeks was, I mean, I've never experienced anything like it. And I think I'll probably struggle to replicate that. But it was unbelievable.
Yeah, I guess that would have been good for you coming into the club, right? So a new system and everything, and getting to just immerse yourself in a road trip like that would bond you. Was that an easy process joining the club?
Yeah, it was. So I'd have a little bit of experience playing with Jesse Wagstaff, Angus Brandt, like those types of guys with the Boomers and things like that. So that was handy, and then it was always good to have Nick there as well.
Like, of course,
someone that you know how he plays, where he's going to be. you know, you can talk to him without actually communicating. So,
yeah. Like Shaq and Kobe.
Yeah, exactly. So, all those processes were sped up, and obviously dealing with Trev previously when he was in Townsville, and I was a young fella. So, yeah, all those relationships were really good.
Were you in Trev's good books? Like he had, from my experience of working at the club, like he definitely had his two or three guys that he trusted completely, and not that he didn't trust other guys, but you know, he had his favorites, and then the others that were, you know, I heard him yell Greg that many times, scream Greg's name.
Yeah.
what was your sort of relationship with Trev like with that?
Yeah, I think to begin with, it was obviously I had to learn the playbook.
Yeah.
Know how to get Bryce shots, when he wants shots, where he wants shots. So at the beginning, I kind of felt like I was trying to learn everything.
Yeah.
Like that. And needed to. I mean, because you had Damo out there that was knew how to run the show, knew how to get stops, what plays to call and all that. So at the start, I think I had to gain trust from him. Although we knew each other previously.
Yeah.
I think, gaining trust from him out on the floor was a big one. You know, you can go into his office and you can have a chat, and what you're going to hear probably isn't exactly what you want to hear, but you know where you stand, you know what you have to do to play, and there, I think that's something that that helped me out.
What was it like learning under Damo? So, yeah, you just mentioned that was one of the reasons why you wanted to go to the Wildcats. And, I mean, he's considered one of the greatest defender in the NBL. I mean, the award's named after him. So, you know, you're in good shape when that happens.
Exactly.
When I think of Damo Martin, like if I was to see him on the street and someone would say, what do you think he does? I'd say, like, I don't know, real estate agent or, like, you know, wedding celebrant, like all the other things.
There's a million things.
Yeah,
right?
All the other things. But I wouldn't pick him as like this defensive beast on the basketball court. So why? How is Damian Martin? Or how was he so good at? Because he's not like a really tall, long armed guy, strong. Like, obviously, he was really strong, but like you know, prototypically as an NBA defender or something like that, you have a certain image of in your mind. So how is he so good?
Yeah, I mean, playing against him for a lot of time, you get to know that, like, you know, his hands are unbelievable. Like,
right.
The way he deflects balls, if anyone else was to hit it, the ball would probably just, like, you know, slowly bounce out of their hand. Whereas if he hits it, it's like ricocheting out of the arena. So he had really good hands. I think just his attention to detail and scout and things like that was massive. And the input he had as well, like with how we played and what we're going to do with import guards and how we're going to defend them. Like, Trev kind of left that up to us to decide, like, we're the ones out there on the floor. And I think that was something that was really cool to recognize and learn from him. And as soon as he steps off the floor, like, he's one of the most forgetful people in the world. Like, he'll walk out of training, he's carrying one shoe. And I'm like, I don't understand how when you step on the floor.
Yeah.
You know exactly what's happening. You know how to win games, win championships. And, so it was really cool to learn from him. I learned a lot in terms of leadership and how to communicate with people. And, it's something that I'll hold on to forever.
Awesome. So 2019 season, you and I won a championship together.
We did.
We did. Even, you know, all the staff get rings. I don't know how you feel about that, but I actually never got mine because I left shortly after the championship.
Surely we can do something about
that. I've tried, mate. And Julian, who works with us as well, he got a ring for that year and all the other people. But I think the moment, it doesn't surprise me, Wildcats sort of skimped out on cost to not get me a ring, even though they promised it and Troy's not there anymore, so I'm not going to go to Hutchie. Like, hey, Hutchie, just letting you know, Troy promised me a ring 3 years ago, wherever it was. You got injured in that season. So what was that like, sort of being a part of that team and seeing that championship?
Yeah, so it was like Damo. I think that was Damo's last year.
Yeah.
He like partially tore his Achilles or something. So still played. I don't know how.
But I feel like every night we were prepared for writing, like, you know, his retirement.
Yeah, like, it was scary. And not many of us actually knew what he had done. So he wasn't training, barely ever trained, like, but at games would roll up and play.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is pretty crazy. Like, he's done something. Like, for him not to train, not to be, you know, playing as many minutes as he normally does, and I was like, this is, something's not right. And then over a couple of red wines and things like this, you know, the story comes out, and it's like, man, you just have to do whatever you have to do to be on the floor with us when it comes game time. So, yeah, I think that year was the COVID situation as well, I think.
The Melbourne grand final, I think. Yeah. I don't think COVID had started yet.
The Sydney one was the COVID one. Yeah, so yeah, I was injured for the first grand final, first semi-final, sorry, and then came back for game one of the grand final against United. So to sit there and experience, you know, not playing for 6 weeks and then your first game is in a grand final.
Yeah.
I was a little nervous.
Did you think you were going to play at all?
I thought I'd play a little bit.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, once I was out there and things were going well, Trev just kind of let it roll and away we went.
That's a nice little wrinkle for Trev to have for, like, you know, when they're scouting, you know, not knowing if you're going to be at your full strength or not. Like, it's a nice thing to be, oh shit, Mitch is like coming at us.
Yeah.
So that was awesome. Any good stories or memories from the celebrations of that championship? I know you guys celebrated at like a cricket club in some random suburb. Well, just so you know, the staff, we went to, we rolled into Crown and had a party at Crown.
Oh yeah, we know. Yeah, we know. I don't think we were too happy about that. But it was a pretty cool series. Like, we won game one, went to Melbourne, lost game two, came back home for game three and won by a pretty big margin. And it was a really weird feeling walking into, you know, I think it was Hisense then Arena or John Cain Arena for game four. Like, had this feeling that, like, we just knew it was going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, it was so weird. I don't know how to explain it, and I've never felt it ever again. But before we ran on the floor, like, Bryce, he's not really a big speaker in a team environment and things like that. And he pulled us in before we ran out, and I probably can't repeat what he said, but everyone left that huddle like with goosebumps. Shit. And we walk out to game four and won game four in an incredible game with Tarico White going crazy.
Yeah.
And yeah, after that,
Tom Jervis was just like, came out of the, like, out of the blue and just dominated that game.
Yeah, he was unbelievable. I mean, everyone played a really big part. Greg had massive plays in that game as well. So to finish it and to win, like, when that final siren went, it was it was a feeling that I'll never forget and haven't experienced since. Although winning two, the second one was a little different. But it was so cool to have my brother there, my fiance there, in the crowd in Melbourne, and to experience that with them.
Yeah.
It's pretty special.
So yeah, the next year COVID hits, so the season's pretty weird. It'll be one of the weirdest seasons ever. I think it starts normal, you're playing, you know, normal crowds and stuff like that, and then around January, February, it would have been roughly, crowds start to be taken out of games, and you're playing, did you guys do a bubble, like any sort of?
Not that year. So that year, the crowd stopped in the grand final series.
That's right. I think you played in front of a crowd in Perth and then went to Sydney and then there was no crowd.
Yeah. So I think, game one was in Sydney.
Right.
So we played game one in Sydney in front of a full crowd.
Yeah.
Won game one, came back for game two. We're sitting in the locker room at Shoot Around and everyone's getting notifications like the Formula One in Melbourne have banned crowds.
Yes.
And we're like, oh, that's weird. And then we're getting messages from the Players Association saying crowds are going to happen. This is, you know, protocols are going to be in play. They're not going to be nowhere near you guys.
Yeah.
You know, just so Perth can get fans into the arena, like, pretty important part of the Red Army.
Yeah, of course.
So that happened, and then everyone goes home, has a nap, whatever, wake up, come back in to to do pre-game stuff, no crowd.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is really strange. Like, friends and family were allowed. So I think there might have only been 20 to 30 people in RAC Arena.
Yeah.
For game two of a grand final. And it was one of the strangest games I've ever been a part of.
Yeah.
It was like I was back in Townsville playing local comp on a Tuesday night. Like, someone would score and it's like, yes. Yeah. Like, it was so strange. Like, you could hear all the play calls. And at that stage of the season, you have a really good, I guess, feel of what the plays are, when they're going to run them, who they're for. But you can hear them clear as day. Like, the coach is yelling them out. So, it was a really strange game. We ended up losing that. And then going back to Sydney for game three, which is the final game of that series, before it all got shut down. And Damian Martin plays his last ever basketball game in front of an empty arena in Sydney. So we won that game and came back. And then, it was a bit of a roller coaster from there.
How I was thinking about that, because basketball is one of those interesting sports where, you know, every sport, obviously, a lot of communication happens on a footy field, a lot of communication. But on a footy field, like, the full back can't hear what the full forward saying from, you know, on the same team. But on a basketball court, you hear, like, every play call, like you said. So is it easier to, like, know what they're going to do than when in that situation? When there's a crowd, obviously, you'd not be able to hear everything.
Mm.
So is that some sort of advantage or disadvantage, I guess, in the same way?
It's hard to say. Like, I guess because you can hear it, you know it's coming. But at the same time, I mean, you've played them, I guess, four times sometimes during the regular season already.
Yeah.
You've already played him in the grand final. So, plus you've got scouts.
Yeah.
You've got iPads with every play they run, how many times they run them, who, you know, what players' tendencies are and everything like that. So, I think for the most part, I think it's the players' tendencies, I think, is the biggest one. So, which is tough to obviously pick up on the fly, but it was really strange, and I mean, they knew exactly what we were running as well. So,
Did you have to change any play calls to try and hide what you're going to do, you know, and they could hear it, or you just like, fuck it, we're just going to roll with it.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah.
So then you win that championship. So that was so strange. Basically, the league decided who won the championship based on the current standing of the series. So you guys were up 2-1.
Yeah.
At any point, like, did you think it was just going to be a no result situation, or?
So I'm not, before big games, I get nervous. During the games, not so much.
Yeah.
Because I feel like you have some input into what's going to happen. Sitting there in that room at Bendat, when they're about to announce who's going to win the championship, if there's going to be a result, what's going to happen. I was, oh my God, I felt sick.
Shitting yourself,
like, absolutely sick. Like, I had no idea what was going to happen. The press conference starts, everyone's sitting there, hanging on to every word that they're saying. And then when it's announced, like, it was a weird feeling. Like, do we think we deserved it? Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Through the games throughout the year, you know, we played really well against them. Through the games in the playoffs, we were up 2-1. So in our eyes, it definitely made sense, and we think we definitely deserved it. And it didn't have the same feeling as that final siren going in Melbourne, getting to celebrate with everyone. But it was still a really, really cool time. And I think Miles Plumley was with us that year.
Yeah.
And he didn't care what happened. He didn't care if we won or lost. He just said, experience this environment with you guys, and he's like, I've never had anything like it. He's like, I've been in the NBA for years, and everyone's there just to collect checks and and spend money. And here, like, it means something to you guys. So he goes, he was just happy with coming along for 7 weeks or whatever it was. He was here and, making friends.
Yeah, that's so cool. So, yeah, a really weird way to, especially for Damo, like you said, to finish his career in front of an empty Sydney arena. Then we're almost at your time moving to Brisbane, but the thing that a lot of Perth people like harp on about is the streak, like the playoff streak. And every year that you guys made the playoffs, it just compounded this point that eventually it was going to stop, right? There's no way for the rest of eternity Wildcats make the playoffs. Was that talked about much after you guys didn't make the playoffs? I think it was after 35 years and a lot of talk about it from the outside. But what was it like for you guys inside the club?
Yeah, it was pretty tough. That following year after Damo retired, we ended up making another grand final, so the streak was still alive.
Yeah.
Wags was captain, so he got to, you know, experience that type of stuff. And then the following year, we miss out.
Yeah.
Last second shot from Bryce against Southeast. If he makes it, we go into the playoffs, and you know, the one time he misses a game winner, that's it. It's all over. So it was a really tough period, just to see Wags and how I guess, you know, upset, and it means the world to him. And I think he kind of took a lot of responsibility for that, which, you know, he shouldn't do. And it's not on him at all. It's on everyone that steps onto the court and pulls on a Wildcats jersey. So for us, it felt like a failure because we didn't achieve our goal. Like, our goal was to win a championship.
Yeah.
We didn't achieve it. So that's a part of it. That's it. It's an incredible achievement that the club has had, you know, to experience that many successful seasons.
Yeah.
I don't think it's ever really been done in sport around the world. So it's something that I'm proud to be a part of and experience, and I've learned a lot from it.
Yeah. So you have recently just signed a deal with the Brisbane Bullets. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
Was there a part of you that, did you want to stay at the Wildcats? Did you want to look for something new? How did that sort of process happen for you?
Yeah, so I was still contracted for the season coming up. Went into the exit meeting and kind of voiced my, you know, concerns and got some stuff off my chest and left the meeting feeling really comfortable where I was and excited about the opportunity I was going to have leading into the next season. And then start hearing whispers in the media and things like that we're mutually looking to part ways, which wasn't the case at all. You know, I signed a contract and it means something to me to be a Perth Wildcat. So I wanted to live out that year. And then, you know, if it wasn't going too good at the end of that, then sure, we could go different ways. But wasn't meant to be. And I'm just glad I got a really good manager on my side and we're able to get a good deal to head to Brisbane, back to Queensland.
Do you, when you hear stuff like that, you know, like, I guess, I don't know how it actually happens, but if the club sort of leaks a bit of news that, you know, you guys are mutually looking at options, do you like want to get on the phone and call and say, hey, what the fuck, or are you, or do you just like, I don't know, it must, for me, I would be calling straight away.
Yeah.
But you, obviously, as a professional, I'm sure you handled it properly. But yeah. I don't know. It must be a tough thing to go through.
It is difficult. I think when you've played in the league for a lot of years and you create friends and meet people along the way, you have someone at every club that you know.
Yeah.
Whether that be coach, GM, someone in the front office, like whatever it is. So, they were calling me saying, hey, like, what's happening? Like, we're hearing this, we're hearing that. And it's like, oh, okay, no worries. So,
well, I call bullshit on that. You don't have to say that.
So, so it's good to obviously have people in other clubs that will give you a heads up when things aren't going to play. But when I found out and things weren't looking too great for me to stay here, I'm glad that Craig Hutchinson gave me a call. He was one of the only guys at the club that picked up the phone during that time and said, hey, like, what's happening? Like, I want to help you out as best I can. Let's talk. So I'm very thankful for him. Someone that's cops a lot of heat in the media.
Oh, yeah, big time.
It means a lot. We still got a really good relationship. We're going to catch up when we're in Brizzy and have coffee and things like that. So very
drink
thankful.
Drink coffee now?
I drink big coffee drinking now. So, yeah. But yeah, so it's good to have, I guess, a friendship like that. And yeah, we'll be close for a long time.
Awesome. I'll give you a couple more questions from people on Instagram that have left us some questions. First one actually from me. Are you going to take the smoker over to... I know you're a big smoker guy. I've been seeing you on Instagram. Is that like a random thing that's come about, or I don't know, you've been watching Netflix series about...
Yeah, no, I don't know. It kind of just come about.
Yeah, nice.
I got a lot of people sending me things that like playing golf, smoking meat. All things that come about when you turn 30.
Right.
So I only just turned 30. So maybe it is true, but yeah, I'm just trying to have a dabble, but that's definitely coming to Brisbane. Because Aaron Baines is a big, he's big into his smoking.
He would
too,
know
so,
as well.
Yeah.
He would know spending time over there. All right. First question. If the Crocs hadn't folded when they did, would have they gone on to win an NBL championship?
It's a great question. I would like to have hoped so, but realistically, I think having a good run in playoffs was probably something that was definitely achievable for that young group coming through, yeah.
And this last one here, should there be a second NBL team at Perth?
That's a good question.
A lot of talk of expansion at the moment. Obviously, Tassie's been really successful.
Yeah.
Were you thinking about going to Tassie at one point?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was. After the grand final against United that we lost. I was off contract and Jacob Chance had just gone there. Scott Roth had just gone there. So it was close.
Bit of whining and dining bringing it over to Tassie.
Yeah.
So yeah, second NBL team. Or if not, like an expansion somewhere you think deserves a club?
Yeah. Frio would be interesting.
Mm.
Frio would be very interesting. I don't know how the Red Army would take and what that would do to memberships, but it'd be a pretty handy little rivalry, I think.
I think so. I think given that the way the Wildcats have gone in the last couple of years, and I think people are a little bit pissed off with like new management and things like that, a very smart business person should come in and start a team, and I reckon you'd get a lot of fans.
Yeah.
And it would create a good rivalry.
Definitely.
So that's, it's a good shot.
I mean, if Luke Travers makes the NBA, like surely.
Yeah. Rocco.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good.
Surely he can pitch in.
Exactly.
He doesn't pay for coffee, that guy.
No, definitely not. So, he could just buy a team.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, man. Really appreciate you coming by. A reminder, and you can do this as well if you want to win this. This how many of these do you reckon you've signed in your time? These jerseys.
A fair few.
I've watched you guys do that where there's just a line of like jerseys, hats, and you just sit there with a Sharpie for the longest time.
Yeah. I'm surprised not everyone in Perth has one, but make sure you comment.
Make sure you comment on YouTube, on the YouTube page, and we'll hang on, which one are you here? Wait, you'd know your signature from looking at it.
Yep.
Right there?
Yep. All right. Yep, so it's definitely got yours on there. Maybe we'll get you to sign it again.
Yeah, easy.
Because two Mitch Norton signatures, one of only, probably the only jersey in the world that has two Mitch Norton signatures on there. Comment on our YouTube page on Backchat Studios. You search for the Backchat Basketball Show and you can find us on Instagram, Backchat_basketball. You can also email us, hello@backchatpodcast.com to you, send us in questions and other things like that. Next week, I'm trying to get Jesse Wagstaff on the pod. Been saying that for weeks.
That's a big guest.
I've been trying to get one person to help me get Jesse and they haven't been super helpful. Who do you think that would be?
Greg Heyer.
Greg, if you're listening to this, come on, man. Help me get Jesse. Otherwise, I'm just going to go direct. We'll see you next week. We're in a rough patch now of basketball where there's no NBL. NBA. Hey, quick question. Who do you go from the NBA?
Boston Celtics.
Can we have Jalen Brown? I'm a Mavs fan. I reckon you guys are done. They're going to break up that team.
Yeah, I reckon it won't be too far away.
Rebuild on the way. Next week, don't know who it'll be. Ben Malice, maybe bring higher. We'll catch you next time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That episode from Backchat Studios lives on the Acast Creator Network. If you want to sign up as a patron or access all of our merch, head to backchatpodcast.com.au.